Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host. Well, maybe not a host anymore, just Niles McFlower. And I would like to say this. Tonight, we're going to have a kind of slightly shorter show than normal. It's going to be 2 hours, but we'll probably go back to 2.5 next week. And I think that the appropriate subject, which is going to be future science, technologies, and spiritual development, will fit right in with some things that are in the news, some things that people have thought about and can sometimes debate about. It's also going to be, we'll say, a little bit prophetic, because some of this is about future, and future is usually somewhat prophetic, but also somewhat revelatory, because much of this has not been explained in terms of spiritual development. And I think that that will probably change the overall position and perspective of these potential, we'll call them, changes in life on this planet from both science and technology. Now, here is the interesting part of this. Science is along the fifth ray, which is a kind of ray, we'll call it, basic understandings dealing with mental truths and how they reflect on the minds of people first, and then eventually sometimes they come to fruition through changes in the physical world. Technology is also mentally focused, but it's emphasis is specifically on those things that come to fruition in the physical world, and is less concerned about the changes in, we'll say, how civilization functions in terms of being spiritual in that. So you can say that technology is almost blind to truth, and science is all about the truth. So we should look at, with some suspicion, technologies when they're included with spiritual development, because obviously as much as half or more of them will not be beneficial for the spiritual development of this world. That is not true of science. Science predominantly is when it is real science. Now, there is also, some people call it junk science or false science, science that is made up and in some way changed or obscured from truth. But that's not science anymore. Science is supported by truth, whereas when it's supported by people's desires and or policies that they believe in or some other kind of usually astral conviction, it almost always results in a disaster for both science and for those folks who are doing that over time. They lose credibility, they become outcast, and their own community, which may have embraced them, scientists, may reject them, and they may be discredited in a number of other ways, including economically, and eventually they may be prosecuted for some kinds of activities. So in all those kinds of situations, that's the excluded part of what I'm talking about tonight. I'm not going to get into all those things because there's a whole plethora of them all over the place, but each plethora, we'll say, in its own right, could take up more than the time we have tonight. I don't care if it's climatology or if it's energy issues or just a whole slew of places, and in some cases dealing with evolutionary factors and just a bunch of stuff that is cooked science, changed to the ways of the person or persons concocting their results. Hopefully, those folks probably don't do this, but they may eventually recognize this and cease from doing so because they harm everybody. It's not just them, they're harming a whole field, a whole part of our world. It's just not a good thing that it happens. Now, sometimes it's just strictly an ego issue. You know, I mean, if someone wants to be special and they want their thought to be special, even if it's profoundly wrong, because their desire to be important and special, they do things that are just outlandish and harmful for the majority of us. All right, so let's look at the good side of the situation. I will start with science. Science today is still growing. Don't think that because the third ray is moving out of focus, it's some way hampering the development of truth in knowledge and eventually wise truth, which includes understanding as well. There is a continual growth of that because that particular ray focus is being helped in our world. And even if it wasn't, our whole race is, human race, is along the fifth ray, focused in the sub-ray as well along the fifth ray. So there's an intense development in science at the present time. Intense. And so when you put it all together, all the bonus features are adding up to a big, big jump in science, with hopefully only these negatives I first mentioned as being anything that's really going to hold it back. So that's a good thing. Now, we should be aware that 95%, now this is going to sound crazy from what I just said, 95% of the present level of knowledge, and less, even less in terms of understanding, is correct. In other words, science is basically wrong about most things in terms of complete or whole knowledge, and therefore the truth. But this is way better than if you go back several hundred years ago when it was a fraction of 1%. So we've come a long way if you do it in relative terms. Now, for a lot of people, you may be scratching your head and saying, oh, where is this guy coming from? Look at we airplanes, rockets, cars, we do all these other things. That came from basic science, right? Well, it did. And even more than those things, which are more technological results, we have a whole society that is enjoying better knowledge and understanding about our universe. Looking out into the stars, we have a pretty good understanding of the physical dimension that we exist in. They actually have a count, which isn't too far off, of the number of galaxies and stars on an average in each galaxy and the distance and the ways they are distributed. I mean, they're not 100% accurate on that either, but they're getting pretty close. It's not too far off. But that, be it as it may, is, if it were perfect, it at most would be a seventh of the entire universe. And actually, it's much less than that because the seventh dimension is the least developed and the most, we'll call it, empty in terms of development. Now, I talk about spiritual now. I'm talking about development in terms of knowledge and then understanding of science. That's the problem. So we have this, we'll call it, we're very, very nearsighted in terms of science because we think of generally science as being the universe that we presently believe exists, and we leave out these other very complex and more sophisticated dimensions of time and space. And when I say it's seventh, I'm just talking about it in terms of the number of dimensions, which are seven. But the fact of the matter is the seventh dimension really has only one dimension of time and space. I know we call it three with time added, but it really is one, maybe with some part of time added. So it's very, very, very small in comparison to the dimensions of time and space greater than this one. And that changes everything. So you don't get a multiplier just by number. You get a geometric number. You get a multiplier exponentially by these other dimensions, which changes things vastly different. The physics are so vastly different, and so is life, that it is almost impossible to equate the real differences. That's our basic problem. The reason we're 95% ignorant is because most people don't even hold or believe or think that there are dimensions of time and space outside of the ones that we can somewhat perceive with our five senses. And our two senses about spirit and God may help us to believe past that point, but not with any great accuracy, only that there's a belief. Belief is one thing. Knowledge and understanding are totally different from that. So science is really good in this microscopic point in time and space, even though we as a race, I'm talking about the whole human race now, are in this explosive time of development. But let's talk about that. Let's talk about some of this in terms of the big picture of physics. We're going to get to places like biology and other stuff. But I want to put this in perspective because it's so huge in comparison to our present level. Until there is extra dimensional understanding or knowledge, extra dimensional knowledge, the field of science will be constricted by what is known as pretty much a standard model of physics, which more and more is not working for many physicists. And has with it a denial, for the most part, of God and there being anything that we can't logically, positively sense. So it's a real, we'll say, quagmire for the majority of scientists because that's what they buy into. It also gives them an unfortunate, we'll say, disability. Their disability is that their two spiritual senses, the heart and crown chakra when fully informed by consciousness, is missing to some extent, damaged by their both lack of belief, which is a belief in itself, and misunderstanding of knowledge. So they don't understand the knowledge they have, and a greater lack of consciousness or understanding of that which they don't have knowledge about. Sometimes the more important thing in science is to have an understanding of what you don't know. Not what you do know, but what you don't know, because that allows you to become open-minded. If you fail to have that, you become closed-minded or egotistical and sometimes arrogant, which produces much worse results than most of the other, we'll call it, science problems. That's a biggie problem because it is so global. When a person or a group of people have such a condition, it just about puts them way behind the eight ball in terms of development. And I'm talking about spiritual development. They lack that. And over time, the science they create becomes, of necessity, self-supporting, usually against truth, after a while, because the truth is contradictory all over the place, and then they invent reasons for the contradictions which have no foundation. They just invent them. They'll invent a new particle, or they'll come up with a new theory. Half the time it's either completely wrong or it's partly wrong. And so you end up with things that are inconsistent to the reason of people. But it helps these folks to feel better at night, better with themselves, and to develop a kind of counter to belief in God. Instead of believing in God, they believe in their own knowledge, even if it's wrong. It's putting man before God. And in some ways, almost a pseudo-spirituality. This is real problematic, because these folks are listened to by folks who don't necessarily have the same exact, you know, they're not as far into that structure of thought themselves, but they, because they have degrees, because they have titles, because they give themselves titles, people believe them. And they're believed as much or more so than preachers or other folks in different disciplines. So this gives them credibility that they don't deserve. They convince other people that they should have. All right, so that's very damaging because it eventually contaminates the civilization and it leads to a non-spiritual development. Now, there are some good signs that this can't continue indefinitely because there's some paradoxes to start bugging the system and creating enough problems that even those who are somewhat entrenched in the egotism and or conventionality of the somewhat made up theories start to disbelieve them. They start to say, well, you know, I'd like to believe in this. I believed in it for 35 years, but now I can't believe in it anymore. And that's a good thing. It happens here and there at the present time, sporadically, not in any kind of wave of major groups of scientists. It may happen in other walks of life against some, we'll call it, establishment scientists, but it hasn't yet percolated to the point where it's by group within the field of science. Not very much, anyway. So this could be the salvation if it were to become more, we'll say, universally accepted that there are really fundamental problems in the present big-picture understandings of what both physics is like and in some cases some more strange effects in some parts of chemistry, mostly organic, and then for sure models of we'll call it genetics and fields relying upon that. So there's a lot of things that are waiting in the wings to maybe tip over the cart and allow us to maybe start anew with greater open-mindedness, which is a big, big part of this change that is needed. Now, I still have a fondness for science because I think in its true form, which is to find truth, and then to use that truth with understanding or wisdom to help others do the same, is a tremendously noble and beyond noble means of creating light in the world. I buy it. It's just not handled that way. Partly because the educational institutions have been, we'll say, overrun with people, not just scientists now, who in the higher educational institutions who tend to not even believe in God. That's strange. But it's true. And that's part of something called the progressive movement, which has tended to look towards that part of the social paradigm as a means of gaining control and power. So there's an abuse because you don't have open-mindedness in higher education that really leads to that. All right, so let's talk about how this could be changed in the future. And a couple of things that I'm going to suggest about this are likely to occur, but not certain. And that is that as time progresses, there will be more and more evidence that there is a universe not of parallel multi-dimensions, but there is a universe quite the opposite, that is integral to the universe we find ourselves in, but has multi-dimensions to it. That is going to, and part of this is going to come from people that are open-minded enough and following some concepts in superstring theory and other parts of that, and supersymmetry theories. There's going to be eventually a consensus that other dimensions of time and space have to exist because the mathematics will support it. And one of the areas of math that will be more open will be the what-if proposition that instead of there's a standard model where it's universal throughout the universe, there's a non-standard model that changes the most basic elements of the rules, so to speak, of the quantum constant, very, very important thing, which is a guy named Max Planck. He came up with this wonderful formula and theory that there's a certain level of uncertainty that exists where we are. But that level of uncertainty in terms of subatomic and even larger things, especially in terms of waves instead of just particles, is much different in other dimensions of time and space, even slightly different in the dimension of time and space we are in when you move to the part that is called the electromagnetic part. So this is going to be discovered. Some of you who have read stuff that I've written or heard prior shows know that I've explained it and how and in what ways, and even gave some numerical values to help people. But the point is that what I write is not read much by the folks who are going to be eventually needing to get this out there, so to speak. You'll have to be some people with the kind of experience and credentials that will prove to other folks that they should listen to them. Now, that doesn't change what I've said. It just means that other people will need to back up what I've said in order to improve its receptivity. Now, you can ask, why hasn't this happened? Well, I've talked to a number of businesses. Some of you know that. But the point is that they're more defensive than open-minded. And sometimes they're almost reactive, meaning that if I say something, their response isn't about what I'm talking about. It's about me. Like, you know, you talk about the other person instead of talking about the theory. So it gets into that kind of thing. These are real problems, and I can't change those people. But what can change them is if a number of other people, maybe who read what I said, go and do some mathematical experimentation as well as some we'll call it physical world experimentation, which will lead them to that conclusion. The biggest part of the puzzle here is that we're confronted with what is known as evil or darkness, and it's trying to hide this. It's doing everything it can from what I'm trying to say to being discovered. Now, why is it so important to evil that we not know how the universe works? Because once you get to the multidimensional part of the universe and you recognize that there's a reason for all this, God, in the big picture of how everything works, suddenly becomes visible to some people. And evil needs to have God obscured. So if you convince people God doesn't exist, which is kind of weird because he believes God exists, but he wants to destroy God. And so this is its trick. Its trick is hide the fact that evil exists and hide the fact that God exists, and you win the ball game that way. Now, my hope, and even my thought about this, is that eventually evil's not going to win this game. But right now it has been. So, I mean, it's a stretch to go from where we are at the present time to some 10, 20, 30 years in the future and expect that things are going to change. But this is my expectation. It's not just a hope. It's based upon the overall progression of science and the fact that some of the different areas of science will come together to support each other in certain ways, and this will cause more emphasis on the part of truth and help people to convince other people that their prior ways of thinking have been mistaken. All right, so that's how I see that. Now, when is the question? Well, if we become a bit more, we'll say, virtuous, I don't know how much of it is, but it's certainly better than where we are right now, it'll happen hopefully in the next 20 to 30 years. If we don't, it could be delayed by much longer than that period of time, which could lead to the destruction of our world. Now, why is that? Why would science end up destroying the world rather than helping it to become more spiritual? It's because more and more people will become convinced that God does not exist, and at the same time, they'll simultaneously be convinced that evil does not exist. That is the combination of fatality for a planet. When the majority of people are at that position, life because it's pretty much untenable, and the planet may not even make it another 10 years. That's how fast things can disintegrate with that overall attitude and viewpoint. And science could be the foundation of tipping the scales if it continues to go in the direction it has gone, which, again, I don't think will truly happen. We'll see. Time will tell, obviously. Now, let's talk about, I'm going to kind of switch gears for a minute and talk about some technologies that you may be familiar with, and if not, that's okay. One of the technologies that's going to change things, shake them up, if I say, is that the ability to clone, you know what cloning is, to create something from a prior genetic design and use the same design to, by recombining DNA to get come up with the same kind of thing over again. Doesn't have to be a whole person. I'm thinking about, well, it could be an organ, maybe a limb, a finger, whatever. Science will permit, and we'll get to the point, for a technology to be created that will be successful in the next 10 to 20 years that will allow the replication, or cloning, of various body parts for human beings. These body parts will not be the same as the originals for a number of reasons, which I'm going to get into, which will help people to start to discover there's something behind the whole idea of life. No matter how well they clone and put this new organ or organs into a existing body, that organ will deteriorate much faster than the original. There's two reasons. The first is that a clone is never as good as the original. Now, most people think they're identical, but they are really not identical because the identical has a lot of other factors going for it. Clones don't respond well to stem cell replacements. So they're not going to keep replacing some of their parts as well. So they won't do as well with that. There's a whole bunch of technical reasons for that. But I'll get into the spiritual side, which is even more important in a minute. And then the other factor is that the whole body is not going to be redone, just some organs and maybe some parts. That those organs and parts are still having to work with on an average, a degenerated body, which they will quickly revert to over, over years, maybe a decade or two, versus a whole lifetime. So someone who's 70 and gets a new heart, that heart may only work 10 or 20 years. And then if they get another new heart, that one might only last 5 or 10 years. It just simply has to do with these issues of degradation and the problems that are inherent. Some of it has to do with math, strangely, and how many cells survive versus die and all kinds of stuff. Also, people may be more prone to developing certain kinds of cancers with cloned things, and other problems may persist as well. That being the case, there's another more important and even probably profoundly important spiritual reason. And this has to do with spiritual development. That the energies that make up everything in us just don't last indefinitely. The more you try to keep them going as you pass the age of about 120, the more and more difficult it is. And at 147, it becomes nearly impossible, although you can keep them going. You become more and more selfish, and then you'll kill yourself in various other unrelated ways, accidents or poor choices in different ideas and thoughts in life. So there's eventually you just can't live forever in the physical sense because of this, we'll say, hidden or esoteric reason for energy. It means both kinds of energy, elementary and divinic energies, have to be free after a certain period of time. It can't be part of an organism forever. And the absolute supposed maximum time they can exist within a body, a physical body, and still be spiritually supportive of development in that person, it's 147 years. Where did that come from? 39 times 3 is what it turns out to be. They're cycles, like 7 times 7 times 3 is what it really is, the maximum cycle that these spiritual parts of itself are supported by light. And then after that, it can only be supported through darkness, and that's a real terrible option. You don't want to go down that road. Evil uses the other road. But for the most people, it's just going to be the limit. So while there is some technological benefits, if you want to call it that, people will be able to live longer and somewhat healthier through this particular technology. It won't be the panacea that some other folks think, like, oh, well, I'll just live 100 and 100 years, or thousands. I'll just get new parts all the time. Well, it's totally a very quick blind alley. It will not get you to where you want to go, which is immortality and physical life, because it just can't happen. So there's a very strong limitation, but there's some improvement. For some people, 10 years is a good amount. And for others, 20 would be a fantastic amount. So it's not, and it will happen. I think that this is a very high likelihood of being developed, at least to the level that I've described. Now, other people may disagree with me about some of these ideas, but I think the folks who have done the highest level of experimentation and have really good understanding of it, I think they've probably shaken their heads, yeah, right now in listening to me talk. Again, I'm not some super geneticist, and I'm sure there's people more qualified than I am to talk about that. But it still seems that what I'm saying, based upon both my understandings of science and, again, spiritual side of things, esoteric things, that's pretty much the way it looks to me. It's still a very important technology, and it will change some people's lives by a significant amount. Now, how does that feed back into the science part? Well, the science part of it, obviously, is the underlying ability to use genetics for, we'll say, salvaging, saving purposes of people's bodies and lives. There's nothing wrong with that. I know that some people don't want to go back to, let's get rid of science altogether, let's get rid of technology, we'll all get the loincloths out, and we'll live in some kind of hut somewhere. That's not our destiny. That's kind of the opposite of our destiny. Our destiny is to bring all of the various kingdoms and elements of the kingdoms lower than us into our sphere, and to hopefully use these to enlighten the lower kingdoms while we bring light into our own civilization, which is what the definition of civilization is. Bringing in the lower kingdoms for extension of our senses. So it's a real important part to what makes humanity humanity. Other kingdoms just about totally don't do that. So we do. The very, very smallest amount that some other kingdoms, and we're talking about advanced mammals, do any of that, it's too little to even consider in comparison to a human being. All right. So, that's another very interesting possibility. The greatest part of what I said is that once it's determined that there's something about energy that does not permit the science to just move ahead after a certain point, that will help to uncover God, and spiritual development will increase by the quagmire of not being able to just indefinitely extend physical life. Interesting. Very, very interesting stuff. And let's take another field that we can discuss, and that is in the case of, we'll call it archaeology and paleontology, I guess, prehistorical aspects, both of the development of humans and races of humans, etc. That is going to have probably a big shakeup. Now, what is the shakeup going to be? Eventually, I think this is going to be in the 20 to 30 year range, evolution will include, first with struggles and then eventually with some maybe acceptance, the idea of de-evolution. In other words, things don't just evolve, they can de-evolve. Now, how does that work? Well, I gave a clue to it in this idea of energy only being so, well, we'll call it pliable in the use of creating life. But, and that's part of it. But it goes a lot deeper than that. It has to do with the energies of the rays, which have yet to be fully developed or even discovered by most scientists. And once that's understood, and it will be slightly, because some of the races that we presently think were the predecessors of the human race are the de-evolved parts of the human race. That includes Neanderthals and, well, several of the hominid species that we see presently. Well, they have to have something to do with us because they came before us. And, of course, they didn't come before us. They are de-evolved from earlier real developed human beings. Not as developed as we are today, but more developed than they were. And that's very confusing, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of, you know, you got to kind of take a double take on it and say, whoa, what the heck is that about? Because it's so different from the idea of straight evolution, which is everything that keeps getting more and more developed. Oh, there's some blind alleys here and there. And that's what they think the Neanderthals were. Just a bit of a blind alley, you know. They lasted for 300,000 or 400,000 years, but hey, that doesn't mean anything. That means something. What happened is, of course, they kept de-evolving rather than evolving. So, in other words, they were probably better off 300,000 years ago than they were 100,000 years ago. And that's a scary thing. And as a matter of fact, there is evidence to support what I'm saying. And so it doesn't make sense. And a lot of people that are in that field say, oh, it's not possible. But so let's just ignore it. Maybe it will go away. I know that that's a real problem. And the de-evolution of races explains so much more about the present problems in both evolution and what is known in archaeology and paleontology, especially. Human paleontology. There's just, but if we could also see this, by the way, somewhat in animals, which is even, it's odd that we can't see it even there, that this sort of thing goes on. Again, it has to do with, as the ray focuses change on Earth, certain types of species of animals are more prone to be able to develop themselves, and others are less. And so that affects the whole, or what we would call the whole evolutionary principle. It's an external reality to evolution. Wow. It also means that as these things become revealed, there's a greater chance that people will start saying maybe God is behind it, or something spiritual is out there besides just evolution. But we'll talk more about that when we come back. And for right now, we'll take a break. And there's a lot more to say about future science, technologies, and spiritual development. See you in a couple of minutes.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm Niles McFlower. And tonight, we're talking about future science, technologies, and spiritual development. And I hope that so far it's been kind of right up that alley. I also wanted to mention that for tonight's show, we're going to do a two-hour instead of a two-and-a-half-hour show, just in case you're figuring out how much time you're going to be listening or whatever your reason might be. Okay. So, let's go back to this interesting subject. I brought up a couple of areas that I think, both in science and technology, we're going to see some changes. Let me go a bit, we'll say, deeper into the area of science, because, science in itself has so much to offer. And despite everything it seems like it's so well-developed right now, it's just in its infancy. So there's lots of room for growth. And it doesn't matter what field you pick of science, there's a huge amount that can be added to it simply because we're just scratching the surface in our knowledge and understanding. Now, what will be the next big push that is going to take place in science? Well, I talked about some elements of medicine, but that was body parts stuff. But we're going to see the next big push in medicine will be to genetically alter what we consider to be diseases and to be able to prevent, in most circumstances, the diseases that we presently treat by more defensive, or sometimes they're offensive, but they're still in a true sense defensive means of trying to deal with, we'll say, infectious diseases, with internal diseases to go wrong. That would include things like cancer, macular degeneration, and all kinds of other stuff. These elements of what's wrong with humans are, in a large way, have to do with how humans live in a spiritual sense. It isn't completely that way. I know that a lot of people think it is that are into the heavy spiritual side of life. Oh, it's all due to whether or not you believe in God and whether you live a godly existence if you're going to have any problems. Well, a portion of that is true, a portion. But there's another portion that has to do with the fact that collectively, all human beings live together in a world where some of the aspects of their lives, secede or seed over to the side of the nation they're in or the world they're in. So we don't live completely autonomously from the surrounding rest of the world. And many diseases interconnect from those other sources. Let me give you a clear example of that. It's true. If you are very enlightened, it's hard to get sick. But if you're put into a room, pretty confined, with 100 people who are deathly ill with some fairly, by modern standards, infectious disease, there's still a good chance you could get ill. And it doesn't matter how enlightened you are, because obviously you can't be completely enlightened. You wouldn't stay in the room if you were. But the point is that beyond that, there may be some reason that is overwhelming to stay in the room, even if your own beingness and life are threatened. And that comes from something outside of just your own, quote-unquote, personal sphere, into a sphere of living in a world where you serve and help and co-serve with other people as well as interact with them. And so in some parts of the spectrum of especially infectious diseases, we could certainly say that it is not just a spiritual outcome to be ill. There are certainly factors involved. And for a lot of people, they're big, but they aren't the only thing to consider. And so, from that standpoint, science could be of pretty good help. Now, how would changing some elements of genetic understandings deal with the present level of what we call both infectious diseases and diseases of what we're called the aging destruction of some elements of our internal constitution? Well, genetics allows us, as the engineers, so to speak, to alter the way that things that are bad for us are able to infect us or cause elements of what we call the infection as symptoms. So we can modify the disease without necessarily adversely affecting us. Antibiotics do not do that. They do the opposite in some respects. They hybrid the disease to become more resistant to the antibiotic, while the antibiotic itself may adversely affect us over time and create more opportunities for other kinds of diseases as well as more destruction to our internal equilibrium. So you can see that a genetic outcome has a significant advantage, provided you don't goof it up and change us genetically. You just want to change these things that are infecting us, right, so that they can't. We're not very far away from that. That's within the next 10 years we will see certain diseases that we will be able to do this with. That's even faster than growing new body parts in some respects. And it isn't going to be a, we'll say, sudden radical change. It'll be one thing at a time, maybe just a couple things in the next few years, and then it'll start gaining steam. And eventually this new science, we'll call it, will be applied by the same companies that right now would be in competition with it, which is the pharma company. They'll probably be involved in doing this very thing. And, of course, they'll sell the technology as a means of another way of dealing with curing, quote-unquote, diseases. But right now we don't cure diseases very much. We just treat them. The body still is involved in most of the cure. This will be integral with more of a cure, because if you're destroying the infectious elements through genetics, then there is a good possibility you can enhance the remainder of the system in a human being to deal with whatever remains. So there's a huge positive side to both sides. The negative would be that mistakes could get into this. You could suddenly make super germs by error, or you could suddenly weaken by some severe tragedy the immune system of the host, us. And that would not be good, but it could happen. And that's where the technology, as applied to the science, could go awry. Remember, technologies are neither good or bad. They don't have a propensity to go just in one direction. So great care has to be taken when starting to monkey around with genetics of anything, because the outcomes could be seriously in the wrong direction. Now, why do I think this is going to be the answer in comparison? And I wrote this 20 years ago, by the way. Why do I think this is going to be the answer rather than just better antibiotics or maybe some kind of new technology that cleans away, you know, all bad germs or something? And the answer is the following, that everything else is a defense. And defenses are obstacles that lead to the eventual development of new offenses on the part of whatever it is that's attacking us. That is evolution. And so if you want to get around evolution, you need to become more intimately involved in the structure. And the structure of evolution is genetic. So we change the genes, now you got a whole different ballgame. The thing is completely in a different vein. Certainly these could be weaponized and used in some terrible ways, too. I don't want you to think it's just like, oh, gee, that's going to be all wonderful. Now there have to be a lot of controls to not make it into weaponization and other crazy things. But I think it's inevitable that this is coming. I almost think it's unstoppable at the present time, virtually unstoppable. It's not a bad thing. It could have tremendous good. I know some people that I know rather well who are involved in this thing. So it's entirely possible to do it. It just is the, we'll quote, virtue development has to be equal to the science and technology, or else you could end up with some real bad outcomes. Now, how much is this going to change life? Well, if you remove diseases, especially infectious diseases, from human life, you increase the life expectancy by about a third. So if people are living 78 years, 77 years, or whatever, you're going to see another 25, 26 years added on to that life expectancy just from that factor. So that's a pretty big thing. It's not a small thing. And in terms of the overall effects on aging, it will reduce by equivalent amount, the percentage appearance of percentage and actual functionality of the person in terms of aging. So someone who is 105 will function like someone who is 75 or 77 or whatever. And so this gives us a totally different viewpoint in terms of what life is going to be like, right? Because I know you plan things based upon all these statistics, but mostly our gut feelings about what life is. And people will have a different perspective of how long they're going to live and the quality of that life. Now, all right, that's coming that this quickly, and I do believe it's true. 10 years we will see some significant developments in this. What about the bigger part of that? Okay. What about, besides infectious diseases, what about things like cancer? For the most part, cancers are not infectious. They really aren't. They're caused by the breakdown in the way cells get instructions and obey them within our body. And when they get bad instructions or they get instructions they ignore, they start growing for their own beingness. They don't function as an organized unit within our bodies. They become like another thing entirely. They're not part of us. They're against us in a way. And they're into growing more of themselves. That's the true idea of, a malignancy that is moving out into various other places to develop itself. It's doing that because it wants to, not because it has to or anything like that. And it's kind of a very, very aberrant way of creating new life, so to speak, of what it is, which is a cancer. Serious problem, obviously. All right, so what's going to happen in that realm? Well, it's going to be a little bit later than some of the infectious things, because the easy lower fruit to pick is going to be several relatively easy infectious diseases to deal with. Then cancer will come to the fore, probably. This is just my guess now. I mean, we'll call it educated guess. And the reason we will be able to deal with cancer at that point is there'll be enough experience with the easier parts to tackle a more difficult problem. And the more difficult problem isn't that an outside thing is trying to get us. It's that inside of us, the code that controls cancer has to be altered in the cancer while it's in us and also in other cells that are becoming that way. Now, how do you change that? What's the method, so to speak? Well, now we get into a more complicated method than just changing a virus or a bacteria. You've got to change a human cell. A human cell is much more complicated than the cells that are in those things. And millions of years more complicated, maybe billions of years more complicated. And from that standpoint, our level of knowledge and our consciousness or understanding of how to apply it has to increase significantly. Ah, consequently, cancer comes after. And so from that standpoint, it's not unreasonable to think that in 20 to 30 years, we will be at that point. Will we be able to change a few things in cancer early? Yeah, P53 is a very special kind of bug in cancer, so to speak. That is going to be solved, one of the first ones. It'll be early. But the more complicated ones, the blood ones and certain other kinds of aggressive kinds, very aggressive kinds of tumors, will more likely take longer because those kinds of cancers are more complex. The reasons and the ways they become malignant is multifold. And it literally requires more than a singular approach on a genetic way. Be more complex. But it is still solvable, and the big problem is to solve it without doing harm to the rest of the genes in a human being. I mean, heck, you can always kill all the cancer in somebody's body, you just destroy all the cells in them, and there won't be any cancer anymore. Well, we know that for a long time. They've been doing some of that with chemotherapy. But it's not a good idea, because the process itself actually breeds new cancers, and it makes the cancers of the fear become more resistant as you try to kill them off. You've got to change them. You've got to change them somewhat back to either normal or make it so much so that they can't possibly survive by the genetic changes you're going to introduce in them without destroying the other cells in a person's body. That takes a very sophisticated kind of genetic engineering. And again, 20 years, maybe 25, 30, we should be able to tackle most of the cancers that we presently are familiar with. Now, is that such a wonderful thing? A lot of people are going to say, well, yeah, I hate cancer. Cancer's a terrible way to die. You know, who wants to die that way? Well, in some ways, yes, it reduces the suffering of death. It doesn't eliminate death, but it will increase life expectancy. By how long? About 7 to 10 years. So that's a good thing. Right? Can't beat that. So you could, if you start adding that up with what I just said, it could be almost up to 120 years in terms of life expectancy. It's possible. And that is, if we take it collectively, that could be 30 years from now. Could be. Now, I do want you to understand that all this has to be accompanied by spiritual development. If there is not an increase in spiritual development, even though these technologies may do some of the things that I'm describing, there will be so many negative consequences from them because of a lack of consciousness, because spiritual development raises consciousness. The result will be potentially a negative effect. Instead of more life and more life that is less suffering and better life, those conditions will not be a nexus. We may end up with people who live longer and suffer more, or people who suffer more who suffer less but don't live any longer. So these are consequences of not developing spiritually. And we have to be greatly concerned about this because it is the basis of life itself. to look foolishly at these sciences and technologies as being the only answer we need is just that. It's folly. We will not improve quality of life for humans or for other things in our life on the planet, because they're under our control more and more. So it is a big deal, and that's why tonight's show. That's to draw attention to these fascinating areas, but they don't necessarily mean that we're going to solve the equation that is so important, which is that you have to become more spiritually developed. If you're going to develop more knowledge, you have to have more truth, which comes from having wisdom in the application of knowledge. And if you develop more technologies, every technology has to be directed in a enlightening way, because they aren't by nature enlightening. We'll call them neutral. All right, so we have another possibility, though, of tremendously improving, we'll say, the quality of life. Now, what else is going to take place? Well, not so much with longevity, although that could be slightly increased from what I'm going to talk about next, but from creativity, it's a biggie. And that is that our ability to travel beyond the orbit of Earth and the Moon is going to be tackled. It won't come from the present technologies that we're using. In fact, a chemical rocketry is probably almost at the limits of what it can do. Now, I know that a lot of people say, just build a bigger one. Yeah, bigger, it reaches the point of no return, because the fuel weighs more than the output of the energy, and unless you get something super more energetic, which usually goes kaboom, you're just not going to get anywhere. So we're virtually there now, because the life expectancy of a human being as it is, and the time necessary to move about in even near space from Earth, is exorbitant. I mean, want to go to Mars? Yeah, well, you got 3 years to spare. It's just not a real good solution. Oh, it's okay for a few people to try as an exploratory thing. I mean, back in the day, when they go around the world, it would take years. And some great explorers did that, but the general masses didn't do it. And even the people who had the best abilities to do the exploration didn't do it. Sometimes it was just the ones who were most willing to sacrifice that much of their life to do it. It was all that you needed. And it might be the same way for those that go off to Mars and maybe beyond. Going beyond Mars is a kind of almost an impossibility. It just takes too long. Now, I know, can't you go faster and faster and faster? Well, you can go faster up to a point, but that's pretty limited with the technologies we're talking about. Ah, now we get to something else. What are the new technologies that will help us? Well, the most effective technology is a form of nuclear energy that uses helium-3. Now, what's that? Well, helium normally has four constituents to itself in terms of its inner parts of its design, protons and neutrons. But you can get a lighter version called helium-3, throw a neutron out, what the heck, you don't need. And if you do, it is open to becoming helium-4, but in the process that we call a fusion process, it can develop huge amounts of energy. Not as much as you have in an atomic or nuclear explosion. You don't want that kind of uncontrolled energy anyway. But a more controlled form of energy that, with a few pounds of HE3, you could travel all the way out to, Neptune, and possibly to Pluto, or who knows. You go pretty far, and you can go pretty fast. How fast is that? Up to maybe a sixth of the speed of light. I know this is not very fast, but it is pretty fast, believe me. So you're going to get to those places within a reasonable period of time. You're not going to make it to another star, not unless you're one of the great explorers who doesn't care much about your life expectancy and how long you're going to be out in outer space. So a sixth the speed of light is probably the maximum we're going to achieve at the present level of just changing to HE3. But that's only part of the technology. There's other things that can change. You can start folding space. Is that warping? No, it's something even more important than warping. It's kind of into the idea that space and time somewhat are interchangeable, and you can actually change the ratios of the, we'll call it the amount of space you have to the amount of time. It's strange. And so in your little bubble of space-time, as you travel, you're really traveling through a huge amount of space in much less time. And the bubble keeps changing as you move. So it's a kind of strange thing. And it's a little different than the warping idea, which, again, has a whole other thing to it. Warping compounds the speed you're growing, but you're still going at speed, whereas this other idea is that you're actually moving through a dimensional change. It's not as big a dimensional change as leaving this dimension and going to a higher dimension, which we'll talk about next, but it still has some important qualities to it. How fast can you go? Well, now you're talking about probably inclusive to the speed of light. Oh, it ain't bad. Well, it's not. I mean, it's still 4.5 years to the next closest star, one way. That's a pretty far way, you know. And it's the dog star, seriously. So, I mean, you've got a ways to go. I mean, it's like 9 years, and you've spent a year there, like 10 years. It's a long time. Could some people who are brave use this technology and go that far? Possibly. But I will tell you this. In a spiritual sense, we are confined to this solar system until we rid ourselves of evil. The reason for this is because you don't want evil folks from here going to people who are not evil over there. And so the system has been designed to prevent that from occurring using the kinds of things we're talking about, which is science and technology. And that's good news, actually. So there's a real good spiritual reason for not really being able to do the things that people want to do in their fantasies. I know. So what about wormholes and all those? Well, yeah, wormhole could be a possible way, you know. It's sort of like another way of folding space, by the way. And it's a real bridge, you know, the Einstein-Rosenberg kind of stuff. But the thing about it is that it's uncontrollable. It may be unadaptable. We may not be able to use it the way we would like to use it, and it may not get us to where we want to go. There's a whole problem, a series of problems about that concept. It's not impossible, but it's on the verge. So what would be the way that you, if you really want to be creative, and creative is the answer to this whole thing. I'm going to get into this, but if you want to go really out there and you want to do it within your lifetime and maybe the rest of the world's lifetime, I mean, in some cases, if you travel at the speed of light, you're not really aging. When you get back, you'll come to a world you won't even remember because it didn't exist. So the whole thing is out of kilter. So what you want, because the energy you use distorts the time and space you exist in. It's called time dilation. So everything has changed. You know, and it causes some very confusing kinds of models to take place. As an example, we'd be living a lot more here while those folks are going out there, and they come back, say, 9 years later or 10 years later, and Earth is, hundreds of years into the future or more. That isn't going to help. All right, so there's something better, and that is that eventually, and this can only happen if you're really spiritual, which is the good news, people will develop an understanding of other dimensions of time and space, which will give them a grounding in spiritual development and understanding about God collectively together, and then they'll be able to travel through other dimensions of time and space. And that's way, way faster. Now we're talking about not the speed of light here, but hundreds, thousands of times the speed of light in a relative time, speed of light in other higher dimensions of time and space. Now, the nearby stars are nothing. Get there in a day, maybe. So it's no big deal. However, you've got to become spiritually developed to get there. Ah, so there's the answer to why you can't spread evil. There's a sort of a self-developed safety factor. In order to really leave the solar system, you got to be very enlightened, and you've got to be very much in tune with God, or else you're not going to be able to do it. Ooh, somebody must have figured this out a long time ago. They did, yeah. God did. And so did those that work with God. So it's a real, it's a big deal. Now, souls can travel through the higher monastic world from literally one star to another, if they're close by, and at a, close to 1,000 times the speed of light here. But that doesn't take long at all then. If you're within hundreds of light years of here, it's not that far. It's possible to do. You can see that. All right, so that gives a whole different dimension to this now. You're talking, if you drew a circle, say, of 150 light years around the solar system, there's a lot of stars out there. And there are other civilizations out there within that distance. So that's a big deal. And how does that fit in with the creative element? Well, if you want to be super creative, eventually bringing in the civilizations of other worlds jumps you from the creation of what has been and what is presently on Earth to the super creations of who knows what kind of civilization that may be a million years ahead of us. Or even 1,000 years would be dramatic, right? But if it was in the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, it would be huge. And the ability to create would be greatly enlarged. Of course, we can't get there unless we have the light within ourselves to be able to create it ourselves. Pretty interesting stuff. Also, even moving away from Earth, say we can get to Mars in some fashion using HE3, etc., that's a reasonable distance. If you can travel at the sixth speed of light, you can get there in no time, really, by our standards. And so, like a day's travel. You get there, and you can learn and understand a great deal more about life, and there's a huge change in the so-called science of Earth as it is today. And new technologies will evolve just to be able to do all this. Plus, the new technologies will happen because of discoveries. Now, does that mean you're going to discover that Mars had a great civilization? No, my prediction is that there weren't any. There was barely the development of anything we construe as humankind on Mars. But there was, at one point, life. Animal life and plant life on Mars. And that's going to change things. And people will have a different perspective because we're not so ethnocentric. That means we don't think about life only existing here. And when we open our minds to the idea that life exists elsewhere, there's a greater possibility we'll start developing more spiritual understandings. That's a good thing. So, again, this has value. It has merit to it. And so it's worthwhile. It would be better to develop the technologies to get there more efficiently than the present ones, because only a very, very, very few, and over a protracted period of time, like many decades, will be able to go to a place like Mars. It's just not practical with the present technology. But again, we're not very far away from this other technology. Most of the HE3 readily available is on the surface of the moon. Less than 4 feet from the surface of the moon, in the ground, it can be mined. It's mixed in with a thing called titanium dioxide, and you can get lots of amounts of titanium, which is a valuable metal, and HE3. Wow, that's terrific. We get all kinds of benefits because a very valuable metal like titanium, which isn't very heavy to bring back, it's still heavy, but it's heavy as most, and then huge amounts of HE3, which takes nothing to bring back because it doesn't weigh virtually anything. And just a few pounds of it makes a huge difference. A few thousand tons of it, and there's a million plus tons on the moon, would change everything. All of the power requirements of this world could be relied upon through nuclear reactors, fusion nuclear reactors, using the HE3 model. They're not as efficient as a pure nuclear fusion using, like, uranium. But, you know, they don't have to be. Even though they might be a tenth as efficient, they produce so much power, it's just amazing. And they do so with very little risk, whereas there's a lot of risk in trying to make anything that's reactive in terms of even fission, much less fusion, using what we call normal reactors. Most of the reactors that have been built are fission reactors, and there are no commercially available fusion reactors. There's a few experimental ones using lasers and weird things, but nothing that can produce really any energy. And those actually have a lot of drawbacks, whereas HE3, you get it going with a very, very small fission reaction, and you got yourself a great, great source. And you know who's putting all the bucks into it? It's the Chinese. They're intended on going to the moon and mine the heck out of it. And woe be to us when they achieve that in the next 5, 6, 7 years. Because we're going to be in their dust. Now, does it have to be? When I say we, I'm talking about the Western democracies, maybe even Eastern democracies, like India. That the only people who are really, as a nation, doing something about it are the Chinese, and I don't think that that's a good thing that we're facing. And that's a bad thing. Remember, technologies in and of themselves are not necessarily enlightening. You've got to have behind the technologies virtuous people who do things for the sake of being spiritual, not for the sake of being powerful. Technologies invite abuse through power when there's a lack of spiritual development. And there's no question anybody following a communist model has a severe lack of spiritual development. So be aware of that I'm telling you about. Okay, so there's a big deal because we have huge amounts of creativity that can be expanded upon by exploration and then research about what we're exploring and further development of that. This is a big deal, and it's in our future, and it's not the distant future. I'm not going, I have not yet hit 40 years out. Have not. So we've got a lot happening. Now, some of you are going to say, well, I might be done in 10 years. Well, you might be. But for a lot of our listeners, because some of these technologies may extend your life, I wouldn't jump the gun on this. If you think if you're 75 and you think you're going to be done in 10 years, you might have another 20, 25 years because things are growing so fast. So it's possible. It's possible. If you're spiritual, you'll almost certainly live as long as your spiritual mission is, whatever that might be. So that's the good news. Not everybody's leading a true spiritual life, but those that are, you can almost bet that's going to be the yardstick for them. All right, so back to our show tonight. Future science, where is that headed besides the places I've just talked about? Well, you know, there's some sociological issues that I think need to be dealt with. There's a whole, can of worms dealing with the question of unwanted pregnancies. This has been in the news the last few weeks because of a thing called the morning after pill and this and that. And I think I've said this a number of times on the air. I don't know the exact number, but it's quite a few. The concept of abortion, the concept of destroying life, even if it's not human life, should be abhorrent to everybody. But it is. Some people, it doesn't matter. Okay, we can accept that some people have that as their structure of thought. Looking at it deeper, though, as I tried to explain in the textbook I wrote, Life's Meaning, the soul is not connected to what we call the fetus until sometime after 18 weeks. There is a variability here, but it's definitely after that point. So it's hard to argue if you understand that quote-unquote esoteric spiritual fact, I'll call it, but a lot of people disagree with it, that you're killing a human being. Because to be human, the human has to have a self that is connected to the soul. And the amount of self-development is extremely limited even after 18 weeks, and there is no connection with the soul. You see the problem? Okay. So what you're really killing is a living thing, but it's not a human being. We should still cherish the life that it is, and its potential for becoming a human being is certainly there. When you end that life, you create some problems, because that soul's intention was to incarnate, but not always. A lot of the time, the soul knows that its potential for incarnation is rather limited or even non-existent, but it goes through with it for other reasons. It affects the life of the person having the fetus, and the life of the person who impregnated that person, and families and friends. It has a big effect on spiritual development from crisis for a bunch of people. So a lot of souls do this just for that purpose, and we shouldn't think there's a punitive element to it. It isn't. It's a more educational one, if you want to think of it in that light. So at least up to 18 weeks, it's very difficult to argue that someone is killing a human. And from that standpoint, I don't believe that the concept that government or anybody should have a right to intrude on that element of a person's beingness is justified. I wrote it. I said so. This is not a place the government should be involved. I know that there's some places where it still is illegal, and some countries it's very illegal. But I'm just trying to be open-minded. Doesn't mean I'm in favor of any of this. I'm just talking about it from a strictly scientific viewpoint. Science is truth, and we have to look at what is true. And what I know to be true may not be what you know to be true. So the truth is kind of inflexible by who has the greater understanding and can apply it in ways to prove its truthfulness. Well, that's a whole other thing, and we won't get into it tonight. It's a field called epistemology, and how it develops into truth. The study of knowledge and its relationship to truth. So here is getting to the more succinct part of this. As we move into the point where there is a connection between the soul and the fetus, and that connection is two-directional, remember. I know it sounds hard to believe. Well, how does our fetus have any self? Well, we know that it must be true because there has been experiments with later fetuses being given educational kinds of experiences, music and reading to think, that seems to affect the growth of the fetus and the eventual growth and development of the baby that's born, which suggests that there is something going on. That's some proof. It isn't absolute, but it's some proof that some self is being developed sometime after 18 weeks, and probably certainly before 24, that is what makes a person human, the self. And each time the self is developed, there's more and more connection to the human soul. So this is a big deal. So am I suggesting here that we do have laws against a certain age or point of age? Well, maybe. Yeah, maybe, but it doesn't have to be exactly maybe 18 weeks. It could be someplace else. It could be 16 and a half, 17, 19, I don't know. Certainly, at the point we are by our own technologies, a fetus can become a viable infant, a viable baby. At that point, it should not be allowable to abort that pregnancy and deliver. That's not to say that you can't have a miscarriage. But where is that? Well, that's probably very close to 24 weeks right now. There might be a few 23-weekers in there. So that's where we need to draw the line, but that line may change because this is where I want to get into the future technologies. We're going to probably be able to allow a 21 to 22-week-year-old, or 22-week-old, not year old, excuse me, infant to survive. And that's I think that's probably my guesstimate of the bottom line. Some of it is going to require very advanced changes, both in medical science and genetics and technologies, all coming together to allow this to take place. And that will allow that fetus to become a viable baby. That being the case, as we move into that arena, we need to then change our viewpoints on this issue of war, if you want to call it war, when people should be allowed to do whatever they want and when they should not. And when I say people, I'm talking about men and women, because the man should be involved in this, although women have a different viewpoint in that. I think that men should have some say if they know about it. And so it is a critical part to me of being human, to be open-minded and to accept these realities of life. Because if we don't, we become as rigid as any of the scientists I talked about, maybe more so, by what's called very provincial, archaic even, beliefs that aren't founded enough on truth to be supported. And that always damages people's belief structure and their religions. We don't want that because it's not good. So this is an area where we can improve our spiritual development through being open-minded, even if we don't like the idea of killing anything. At least we keep it to it has to be a viable human that we're killing, and not something other than that. But what does that mean about the eggs and all this other stuff in it? That obviously is outside of the range that anybody should be exercising control over other people, because it isn't appropriate. It's just not. Yeah, a fertilized egg is still not human life. It is life. And it's sad to think that it could become human life, but it is not the same thing. And it's unreasonable to have that position, in my opinion, but I know really many people do. And so they'll probably be hostile in thinking about what I'm saying if they have that viewpoint. But that's okay. I don't mind people having a different viewpoint from me and even not liking what I'm saying. That's all right, because I'm here to provoke thought and help people to find truth in themselves, not necessarily that it's my truth. But I am trying to put some reason into the situation, allow people to think so that they can see maybe there's more than one side to their thought process and their belief structure. All right, so in the near future, and I'm talking about in the next 10 to 20 years about this thing, I think we're going to get back to the 21 to 22-week point on a consistent level. And when we do, we're going to have to walk back even earlier. The time we think that there is a human being that we're discussing, especially if we're dealing with this in terms of force, which laws are forceful, aren't they? So we're forcing people to do things because we claim it's for the benefit of everybody. Well, that's to be found. We have to make sure that that's really true. It doesn't benefit anybody if it removes rights from people that they should have. And it may make some other people feel better, but the removal of rights are very, very dangerous. It has to be at like a very high level. That's why we have a constitution that's based mostly on the rights of individuals, not the rights of government or a collective. That's right. That's what a free society is like. All right. Let's move on. Let's move on to another area that is, well, we'll call it, going to probably change here coming into the near future. And that is in the area of travel here in the vicinity of Earth. We talked about going off to the stars and doing all this stuff. Well, I've got a model of a ship. I'm not going to tell you about it specifically at this time, but I developed. And I can tell you there are ways to travel around this planet quite fast, many thousands of miles an hour. That requires almost no energy, and that you can get to anywhere within an hour or two. So it would require very limited resources to do so. And you could even fly back and forth to the moon eventually using some of this element of technology. The thing is that this science is available now. It's just that the technology has not been developed. All the science is really there as I speak. And knowing this, this will be a big change because the ability to move within close proximity of the planet we live on is an important developmental step in developing greater freedom, freedom of self, freedom of interrelationship with people from other more faraway places, and freedom of exchange of free markets, which will bring tremendous prosperity to the world. Just think, if it costs a tenth as much or a hundredth as much to move even the heaviest of things from one place to another, how much you save in terms of time and energy and money from that perspective. And then if you talk about people being able to move about that way, it gets even bigger. A lot of people say, well, why do we have to move? I can use Skype. Well, you can use Skype, but interacting is more than just looking at somebody's picture and speaking. Interacting means the ability to be in the same sphere of physical as another, or other people, I should say, to interact with the environment they're in directly rather than through some so-called media. And the big difference is that interaction in the environment is dozens, if not more times, more efficient than attempting to do it by these other methods, which usually has many built-in problems. So this would tremendously improve interactions. It would increase efficiency in travel and efficiency in moving goods and services, and it would allow there to be a greater level, we'll say, of cooperation and sharing, which is the virtue of the physical world. So here's a technology that I know can work, that we presently are able to do. So I'm not talking about 20 years. I'd say, you know, it could be done today. And that would allow this to take place. And if you have the wherewithal, meaning money and time, to help develop this, just contact me and I'll tell you, I'll teach you about it, and we'll do something. The important thing about this is that there are a lot of things like this. I'm picking one because I happen to be very familiar with this, but there's a lot of things like this that right now, we don't even have to wait 5 or 10 years. Right now it's possible to do it. And this is so fascinating because what's lacking is a thing called synthesis. We have an under-synthesized world. Why is that the case? Fear. Fear works against synthesis because, and it's used a great deal by evil and the dark side, because synthesis breeds freedom. Freedom of movement, freedom of interaction, freedom of expression of the self in the physical world, and the electromagnetic part of that physical world, otherwise known as the etheric. So it gives you this freedom, which is so lacking for some people, and for everybody, they don't even know how free they could be, actually. And synthesis is missing because the dark side is working overtime to prevent it from happening. So much so that people like me, I'm here pretty much for that purpose in this physical world, to promote synthesis, are having a very hard time because the dark side wants to be anti-synthesis because synthesis produces growth and growth leads to cooperation and sharing, and it doesn't want people to cooperate and share. Oh, what about social justice? You said that's the dark side, and they do want that. Social justice is the BS word for enslavement. Enslavement, not freedom. Don't get confused by it. It's a bunch of nonsense. The ability to freely create and to use one of the tools of creation, which is synthesis, is critical. Critical to being free. Not just like, oh, it's an option I can give up. If you give it up, you become enslaved. And then you can become socially just. You can become one of the people who says, give me everything everybody else has so that we all can be the same. That is absolutely not the system of God. All right, so this is important. A very special kind of place in my heart for it. So here are the other areas lacking synthesis besides this one technology I brought up. Well, it's so big, it almost boggles the mind. I can't go into all of them tonight, but I can give you a few, throw out a few areas where there's still lack of synthesis. There is a tremendous lack of synthesis in medicine, allopathic medicine. Allopathic medicine is so specialized that you go to 10 different doctors and they only know 10 different things about you, but they can't put it all together, which is called synthesis, because the synthesis has been driven out of medicine so that doctors can, number one, specialize and earn greater living, number two, specialize and not have to learn so much and understand so much. The most important thing is understanding, by the way. And number three, which is probably the most important thing, it gives them control over less and less good that they can do. They get more and more control over less and less good. So the answer is holistic medicine, and everybody should be trained in it. They can have their specialties, that's fine, but they have to have holistically understandings. And that was the original concept that is developed in the earlier models of medicine. And it is going by the wayside so quickly you can't even catch up with it anymore. It's happened in the last 30 or 40 years at a progressively increasing rate. And it's partly driven by some people in medicine not being very spiritual again. Spiritual has to deal with cooperation and sharing. When you want more control, you throw that out. And you throw the synthesis out you have to use, and it makes your life easier but gives you much more power over your little baby system that you're in. The power is not the model for creating light for humans in this world. So it's a kind of important part of the problem, we'll say. And the solution is to make holistic parts of medicine part of each doctor's life. That you don't work in some vacuum in your little area specialty and send people off to 20 other different places and get virtually no results, because without the synthesis, you've got nothing. This is the danger. Can we correct this? Well, we're going in the wrong direction rapidly, so I'm not sure. I know that the end of the product of lack of synthesis is the destruction of the discipline that you're in. It just destroys itself. So if one of the areas where there is huge amounts of, we'll call it, a lack of synthesis, is in the quickest area of destroying itself. Now, a lot of people say, I don't see doctors destroying themselves. Well, you haven't seen next year's version, right, if you're in the United States. You may have seen it if you're in Canada, and for sure in England and other countries. But as medicine becomes socialized, it becomes one's bound by these tenets of non-synthesis, and it leads to self-destruction. Oh, okay, that's something to think about. That's something to think about the big time. Okay, how do we get around it? Wow, we need alternatives to allopathic medicine, because presently allopathic medicine is on the wrong road. So to get it to change, it's going to need competition. And I don't know we're going to get it because of presently the model for socialized medicine that's being thrown down, pushed down our throats here in the United States, where it's already happened. We can see the outcome. It leads to the death of medicine being effective. Eventually, people will rebel and they'll go elsewhere in some way or fashion. But it's hard to say where it's going to all end up. It doesn't look good right now. As far as the spiritual development of medicine in general, it's not good. Oh, I know what I said. I know I said genetics, and I gave examples and certain other things. Those areas will still move forward in terms of science. But the practice of medicine is a technology. It is not science. Let me say that again. The practice of medicine is a technology. And so from that standpoint, and I'm not saying every medical doctor is a technologist, but most of them are. And so the real foundation of the problem is that technologies are not virtuous on their own. You've got to have spiritual reasons for the practice. That, and someone who really is spiritual will be a holistic doctor no matter what. But they're weird to me. They give up a huge amount of wealth and power to do so. And only a few have chosen that. And most have not. Yeah, I know. Even if they have a family practice, it doesn't mean that they're holistic. Holistic means that, yeah, they take responsibility for the whole person. That would be a tremendously good family practitioner. How many are there? I don't know. Very few. Hard to find. So this is an area that's dear to my heart, and I have great concern because I see the destruction on the horizon. And I'm not talking about 10 years. I'm talking about 2-3 years. That's how bad it is. All right. So what is the outcome, by the way? What destroys it is delineated set of services defined by things like the rate of recovery, age of the person, likelihood of benefit to the society instead of to the person, healthcare based upon the needs of government instead of people. That's what is the destroying elements. And doctors that are specialized and that don't use synthesis are very easily convinced to go down that road because they're already doing some of it, and they just say, oh, yeah, I can do more of that. Fine. I know how to do that. Sounds like fun to be. Well, it's easier than what I'm doing anyway, and maybe I won't make quite as much money, but just think of job security and think of all the power and control I have. I don't have to work for patients anymore. I have to work for I have no patients. I have the government. I do what the government tells me, and that's it. Hallelujah. I'm free. You're a slave. All right. Well, that was kind of negative. I'm so sorry. Let's talk about something else. Let's move to another subject. All right. What other technologies are we going to see that are going to change? Well, there's going to be changes in what we call the green areas of society, attempts to improve upon the climate, environment, those kinds of things. What's missing from that model has to do with synthesis again. Instead of synthesizing the best technologies and using them all together, which would include gas, oil, whatever, coal, instead of really looking at everything as an open page, an open way of developing a constant and useful energy supply, this whole method of proportionality is gone, and instead, efficiency is thrown out the window. Well, let's put some solar collectors up because it's green, but they're totally inefficient. The amount of energy just to make the collectors doesn't replace what the collectors make for the first 2 or 3 years of their existence. Then you get some other problems, a lot of other problems. They don't produce energy when we really need it. They don't produce energy in ways that we can store very effectively. And even when they do that, the cost is exorbitant per amount of energy. The efficiency is terrible, and efficiency shows a lack of synthesis. Now, can you use solar collectors with 5 other technologies, including maybe just coal-driven electricity, and add to it and make it more efficient? Yes. Then it might be okay. It might work. But if you destroy the gas and oil and coal industries and say we're going to just have wind and solar and that's it, good luck. There will be insufficient amounts of energy because of very low efficiencies, and because of a lack of synthesis, it is self-destructive. It will destroy the economy and our society. Now, what about waves? I talked about that years ago. What about using the ocean to produce energy? The waves moving in and out by coastal regions? Yeah, that could do a lot. I encourage that, but there's still technological problems with it that have to be overcome, and it's a big project to build them. You have to look at the overall efficiencies and come up with methods. And in the meantime, you don't stop mining coal. And if you say, well, what about all the pollution from the coal? Well, most of the things people call pollution may not be, well, because most of it is CO2, but... And there's some methane, too, which are much worse than CO2s in terms of greenhouse issues. But the most critical element is that if you chose to get rid of half of the CO2 in coal, which is reasonable, you would only increase the cost of coal-powered generation by about half. You know, that's pretty reasonable because coal is so cheap. You could still get by, and that is probably an efficiency ratio in the synthetic model that would work. But that isn't the way it's going about now. Now it's to get rid of all coal. Half of the plants are run by it. Well, so what? They'll figure out something. Well, what about natural gas? Natural gas is 80 to 90% more efficient than coal in many respects. This is less CO2. It has a lot of good qualities. Not perfect. What's wrong with that? Wow. But it still puts out CO2. It's methane. It's terrible if it gets into the atmosphere if you just let it go. But we're not letting it go. We're not, you know, pouring it into the atmosphere. So the point is that it has great potential for synthesis. A tremendous amount. And it has efficiency. Its price is going down. It's not as cheap as coal, but if coal goes up by 50%, the two are about equal. Pretty close. And now a gas-fired plant and a coal plant making about the same amount of useful energy with almost the same amount of pollution at the same cost. That's okay. That's all right. Makes sense. Same concept with oil. You can do this with all these things. Now, some people say, well, why don't we go just have a carbon tax then? Because carbon doesn't make any sense. Carbon taxes don't make any sense. Why do you want to beat up the economy and destroy the ability to have efficiency and synthesis with taxes that destroys everything? Instead, encourage people. Say, hey, as you become more efficient, you get more tax deductions. At last. As you do these things, you get more cooperation and sharing with all the industries together, working for a common goal of some sort. But at the same time, there's still competition. you allow competition, because without competition, there will not be either efficiency or synthesis. And the results are disastrous. To remove competition because you want it to be a certain way, because you're a progressive or a communist, does it matter? Take away freedom and you destroy. Remember that. The opposite of freedom is destruction. It's along the same ray, by the way. It's called the first ray. But you have the choice. You can create or you can destroy. Right now we're on a destructive course. The destructive course is that we're turning our technologies into the dark side. Even though supposedly there's all this green thing happening, we're using the exact wrong methods. Instead of encouraging efficiency and synthesis and freedom, we are getting rid of those things and just trying to say, you are forced here by to do these 10 things or else. That's nothing more than bullying people, dictatorship, and evil. And nothing is more inefficient than evil. Well, people say, well, the Nazis were efficient. They were evil, weren't they? They were not efficient. You think it's efficient to lose the biggest war in all of history and to destroy an entire series of countries, including your own, by invading Russia to get oil? Or would it be more efficient to trade with them? Or more efficient to not invade anybody? And instead, be more creative. Maybe find alternatives to oil earlier than was done at that time. Yeah. So if the Germans were so efficient, they did the most ridiculously inefficient possible things on the planet. That destroyed them, which is a good thing because it destroyed evil, because they were evil. You see, you can't get around this spiritual development model. If it doesn't come along with whatever you're doing in science and technologies, you're doomed for failure. I don't care whether you claim, oh, I've got the newest, greatest technology. I can make bombs that wipe out half of a country in 2 seconds. It doesn't matter. You will destroy yourself in a little bit longer run. Oh, you may have some immediate successes for months or a few years. It doesn't matter. There is no way around the formula. You want to be dark, you want to be destructive, you will be destroyed yourself. We're done. It used to take much longer because the level of science and technology was so limited thousands of years ago. There were hundreds and hundreds of years that dark governments could exist. But that's because everything was a lot slower. It just took a lot longer to destroy itself. Not so much anymore. Now it's like, ugh, a year or two could be destructive. Just remember that. And remember that without the efficiency model and synthesis, as we are having in the new form of socialized medicine here, there is inevitably going to be destruction of our healthcare system and our economy. It's inevitable. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's not going to be maybe even a week or not. It's going to happen. For sure. For real. And there is no way out of it. There's no way around it. It's just going to be. Mark my words. You will see. Now, does that mean I have to be right? No, I want to be wrong. These things I'm telling you that I know about spiritual subjects, I believe them to be true. But remember, my truth may not be yours, so you think about it. And if you want to, email me or call me. I'll talk to you, and we can have a discussion about it. I'm completely open about this. I'm telling you my opinion, as I've seen it now, and some other very, very, I think, spiritually developed and very conscious people have said similar things in the past. So it isn't like I'm the first to come up with this stuff. No, I'm just kind of synthesizing it. That's what I'm doing. I'm bringing it together for you so that you can see different angles from a different perspective here and there as much as I can do within the time allotted. And speaking of that, I'm almost out of that time. But here is the point. And I hope today's show has really brought you to this place. Science, if it's real science, leads to truth. And when the truth is applied, it leads to both a, we'll say, universal love that is wisely given so that others have the same kind of love in receiving it. That's what science does. That's the truth that it produces. If it doesn't produce that kind of truth, it isn't real truth. There's a definite contradiction in terms. And be careful of people claiming they know the truth in science. When those other things aren't present, they don't. You may not completely understand why that's true at that moment, but you can assume it with good authority. Now, technologies. Technologies just have no basis for good or bad. They don't. They're not like founded on this or that, and therefore they're good technologies. That's not true. Anybody who claims that they are is giving you a bunch of nonsense. They're telling you that because they want to control you and convince you not to see truth and not to be able to determine where the light is in your life or their life. They usually don't believe in God. That's another part of the equation. So if you find people pushing a particular technology, well, everybody should have windmills, I immediately, red flag should go off. Every technology can be used for good or for evil. It has built into it the ability to go either way. It's the spiritual development of the people involved in it that determines what's going to happen. And if tonight's show has done anything, that should be a biggie. Hopefully the different examples I've used will show what I have said. And it will be something maybe people can take from tonight's show and say, well, I kind of done it. Are there a lot more different sciences and technologies? Oh, huge numbers that I did not cover. Because, again, my purpose is to exemplify a concept, not to try to teach all of the knowledge, which is impossible anyway, about something. It's just to get people to think and to think in concepts and to be able to determine what's true for them. And last, I want to talk about spiritual development. Although I didn't define that very much in tonight's show, there are so many other shows that I have explained what I mean by spiritual development. I didn't think I had to rely upon doing that tonight. But I just want to finish by saying spiritual development means that your senses of God, senses of spirit, God, spirit is God's thought, so the senses of God in everything around you increase by you, us, finding God's thought in all kinds of areas, in this case, science and in technology. And it's, we are able to pick and choose which does more by our own senses, which does more to enhance the ability to sense God. Sometimes we refer to that to understanding or being virtuous. But that's what I mean by spiritual development, and if that has come through tonight, then I've done my job with that too. And hopefully that, as the last part of the piece, is fitting in. Well, we are out of time. So, and I wish we did have that extra half an hour, but I think we did a pretty good job without it. And for next week, hopefully we'll go back to the 2.5 hours. Everything will be as it has been. And for Miles McFlower, me, this has been Why Life Is.